Chapter 5. After Cleia and I washed up, the two of us exited the bathroom, got dressed, and joined the rest of our family in the formal dining room. Daisy had finished up preparing dinner, and the eight of us sat down to eat together as a family. The glow of burning candles lit the room, and when I looked directly across the tabletop, Edeny, Cecilia, and Ryan smiled at me sweetly. The bear girl had prepared a lovely roasted chicken we'd kept in the icebox on board the caravan, and we had a few side dishes to sample from. I ate my fill, and so did the rest of my women as we spoke quietly to each other in the comfortable room. These were the moments I wanted to burn into my brain and remember by the time I became king. I didn't want the battles and fights to be the only things that came to mind when I recalled my past. This was it. My little family, all tucked away and enjoying themselves in the few and far between peaceful moments. Shortly, we'd finally reach Granum and begin planning our attack. But at this moment, I wanted to enjoy myself. When I first created Valerie, I'd been so excited that my machine had worked that I didn't spend a lot of time making sure that I remembered everything that the feline woman and I did together. Of course, I remembered our times together, but now that my family was growing exponentially by each city we took over, I wanted to make sure that I never forgot our times together. Before long, all of this would change, and we wouldn't be hiding and running along the roads before taking over cities. I would be the controller of the whole country. I wanted to hold the memories of our small beginnings close to my heart.
Cecilia!
Edeny's voice broke me away from my thoughts, and I focused my eyes on the she-wolf as she spoke again.
I have one question for you. Of course.
The redhead nodded, leaned forward, and pressed her elbows against the grain of the table.
What is it? You told us that you worked in the guard.
The she-wolf uttered, and settled her violet gaze on the monster woman.
Did you ever work directly with the queen? Yes,
the ex-guard nodded.
Many times before. Since I worked under Hortensia Payne, who was the queen's most trusted guard, we worked pretty closely alongside the queen. Really?
Cleia asked.
We don't know a lot about the queen. Can you tell us more? What is she like? I don't remember a lot of my time as a guard.
Ryan pondered, tapped her chin, and squinted her yellow eyes toward the ceiling.
I mainly remember ordering a bunch of soldiers around, but I can't quite remember the queen as much. What does she look like? She's...
Cecilia breathed, cleared her throat, and then started again.
She's a sight to behold, if I'm being honest. You'd think for how old she is. She'd be this tiny old crone, hunched over and walking with a cane. But that's not true. She's beautiful. This is voice. Sure, it's awful to hear her speak when she's angry. But listening to her talk to you, it's like music or the babbling of a calm spring.
I've never seen her, only the image of her on coins, I explained. Edeny, you had more of a relationship with her. Have you ever seen her in real life?
Relationship?
The Duchess snarked.
I wouldn't exactly use that word to describe what the Queen is to me. But no, I've never seen the Queen. I've only seen depictions or general descriptions. A long time ago, before my mother passed away, I was summoned to the capital to speak to her. But the entire time, she stood behind a giant screen. It was enormous, so I never actually saw her or her face.
Before your mother passed? I asked. Why would she do such a thing?
What did she say to you?
Valerie asked.
Why did she summon you there?
She wanted to form an alliance,
Edeny described.
I doubt she realized that my mother had already explained to me what the queen and her courts had done to my long line of ancestors. She wanted me to sign a contract that once I became the Duchess of Edenheart, she would have a hand in all of its control.
I can assume that you told her no, I chuckled, and a sly smile spread over the wolf's features.
Of course I did,
the Duchess nodded.
I would never hand over Edenheart to her. Never. Not even the teeniest amount of land would be in her name, and I told her that. I wish I could have seen her face when I, a 17-year-old, told her no, and then promptly stomped out of the palace with my shoulders thrown back and my head held high. I never told my mother what happened. She would have lost her mind and done something irrational. Maybe waged an attack against the queen. My mother may have had a heavy hand and iron will while raising me, but she protected me and her city ferociously. I was raised under the same belief system as her. Edenheart was the one place that the Queen could never control, and it should stay that way until the end of time. I was fully prepared to teach my future daughters that too. That Edenheart was the one place in the country that the Queen could never rule. Cecilia?
Daisy broke in.
I'm still curious. What does the Queen look like? If she's so beautiful, what makes her so? When I imagined her...
Ryan chuckled darkly.
I imagined the orcs and ogres from one of Daisy's creature books. Well, my dear, technically orcs and ogres aren't beasts at all. They're actually closely related to humans. They have their own cultures and language systems. Hey, now.
The black-haired beauty grinned.
Imps are beasts, and we also have those things. You're very right.
The brunette nodded.
But Cecilia, can you describe her for us? I don't know where to start.
The black drake woman snickered.
I already said she's beautiful, but it's a strange type of beautiful. Kind of like all of us. We're stunning creatures, but of course, we're monster women.
I've heard,
Josephine broke in,
that she's 10 feet tall.
What?
The imp woman laughed and then shook her head.
No way, that can't be possible. Well,
Cecilia chuckled nervously.
Not 10 feet tall, but that's pretty close. I think she's closer to 7 or 8.
Really? I asked.
She's this giant statue of a woman.
The guard breathed.
Like something you'd seen in a museum or something. You see her and you... No, she's someone important. Her power just oozes from her paws. When you look at her, she's this beautiful ethereal being, and you almost forget that she's done atrocious, unspeakable things. Her eyes are forest green, just like Charles. Her long hair is deep auburn red, and her face is soft and warm, looking as if you'd expect her to be kind and understanding. But that's certainly not the case. Edeny, I can assume that since you were the leader of Edenheart, you had house colors. Yes.
The Duchess nodded.
Royal blue and silver. Not chosen by me, but I do like the pairing. The capital's colors are garnet and gold, correct? Ah, yes.
Cecilia nodded.
She wears the house colors every day in long gowns with sheer robes over top of it. When I first started working for her, the Queen seemed to be in some sort of state of mourning, though for who, I have no idea, and she wore cloaks with the hood drawn low over her stunning face.
Did someone close to her die? I asked. Edeny, do you know?
I have an idea of who could have died.
The Duchess pondered.
But my guess is as good as yours. Kalara was the Queen's right hand, correct? I knew that she had a long line of female consorts that she kept close to her. For the longest time, she had male consorts, and then all of them kept giving her male children. So she switched to females. She's ageless, so an heir seemed kind of pointless to her. I may not have liked her,
Cecilia stated.
I hated her, actually. But I always thought she was the prettiest as she rode through the city streets in her enormous palanquin. The front was open with long sheer curtains in the house colors, while the sides were covered in intricate latticework, so the citizens could see her, but still had a barrier between her and them.
If she's so tall, I uttered, did they carry her through the city? The only types of palanquins I've seen are those carried on the shoulders of servants or consorts.
She did for a long time,
the ex-guard nodded.
But then she hired a scientist to build her a newer, better version of the palanquin. It was mechanized and walked on 8 legs like a spider.
So she didn't want the servants to carry her anymore? That seems oddly humane of her. Cecilia cleared her throat awkwardly, stared down at the table in front of her, and fiddled with her hands anxiously. It was clear there was something else that she didn't want to tell us, and I leaned forward toward her. What is it? I asked. Did she do something else to the consorts?
She made them wear collars and leashes,
the redhead explained.
And they walked on hands and knees in front of the palanquin as if they were pulling her down the road.
For fuck's sake, I grumbled, leaned back in my chair, and rubbed at the bridge of my nose. Oh, I shouldn't have asked, but I was curious.
Moving away from that sensitive subject,
Daisy interjected.
The palanquin, a scientist made it? Yes,
Cecilia nodded.
The same scientist she hired to create other things for her. We didn't know what the woman was making for her, but we knew that the scientist was kept under lock and key. She was basically hid away in the palace. Not unlike how I treated poor Lucien,
Edany murmured.
I'd almost forgotten that I'd killed him. How sad.
He was a misguided man, I explained. And it's unfortunate that he died, but I tried to save him. But despite my best efforts, he didn't listen to any of my warnings. I told him that I solely worked for you, and we weren't involved any deeper than that, but he ignored everything I said.
I feel bad that I killed him,
the Duchess nodded.
But that's in the past, and I cannot change the mistakes that I once made. He could have stopped. He could have gone back to the capital when I dismissed him. But it was his choice to stick around and harass us. A lot of women in the Harlots believe that the scientist is the one who attacked the Queen,
Cecilia stated.
The one who created the super soldier, or whatever it was. Though, I doubt the Queen knows that.
I muttered, cupped my chin, and thought for a moment. Do you know anything more about this scientist, Cecilia?
No.
The Black Drake woman shook her head.
As I stated before, the Queen keeps her locked inside the palace, so there isn't much information about her. The Harlots believe she attacked the Queen, and the Queen decided that now was the best time to strengthen her army. So she sought out a capable scientist who'd be able to improve her numbers through any means. I think I remember that,
Edany gasped, sat up a little straighter in her seat, and pressed a delicate hand to her plump lips.
She sent out letters to each of the city's leaders. I never received one, but I heard from others in the close-by cities that they did. She asked for recommendations and to send forth their best women, who she'd choose at a later time. I didn't get a letter because, of course, the Queen knew I would never respond.
How did she get the scientist? I probed. Especially if she's included in the Harlot's masses.
Someone recommended her,
Cecilia shrugged.
And she couldn't exactly refuse, you know. If the Queen calls upon you with a job, you can't say no. It's a direct order, and if you disobey it, it can be considered treason, and they could be publicly hanged. I'm sure that the Queen has no idea that the scientist she keeps to work on her projects is the same one who attacked her. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Edany chuckled lightly and met my gaze over the tabletop. Yes, I grinned, reached across and took her delicate hand into mine. But I never plotted to kill you. Or, at least, I don't remember doing something like that.
I think we thought about it,
Valerie murmured, squinted her eyes and scratched one of her ears.
But we decided against it.
Yes,
Daisy nodded with a sly smile.
We definitely discussed it, but I'm happy we didn't do it. Edany is a perfect match for our family, and I'm so grateful she's one of my sisters. Her cool, level-headedness is enough to keep most of us sane when things seem uncertain.
I have to admit, I feel the same way. Even before her transformation, Edany was always decisive and firm. I may not have enjoyed our time together then, but I'll admit I always admired her.
Thank you.
Edany smiled tenderly.
I'm glad that even though I changed as a person, there are parts of me that stayed the same.
We sat at the table for a long time and talked, but once the candles burned low, we blew them out and headed off to bed together. We'd learned about the Queen and her dynamic with the capital. I wanted to know more about this scientist, but it seemed we'd have to wait to get more information on her since she was held captive by the Queen. Our journey was a blur of nothing more than travel deeper into the forest. Just as before, when we journeyed to find the Drake, the road inclined upward, and our horses strained to pull our large caravan, but they made it without too much effort. Slowly we made our way down the mountain toward Granum under Edany's keen direction. The Duchess knew this area the best, since she'd controlled the larger city when it was part of her duchy and navigated us from the driver's seat. It became colder as we moved deeper into the mountains, but Edeni explained that once we reached Granum on the far side, the weather would be warmer. Once we left the city, we'd enter into the desert on the other side and travel through the barren land to the next town. When we'd left Edenheart, the trees' leaves were starting to turn yellow with hints of red and orange, but here in the mountains, the cedar trees' branches were heavy with dark green needles, and the trees that grew leaves were barren. The dead leaves skittered and crunched underneath the wheels of our wagon, and a few times I could have sworn I saw a few snowflakes blow through the wind from the driver's seat. I hoped that we'd reach Granum on the third day of our journey, but by the time we reached the peak of the mountain and started to come down on the other side, the flurries of white snow were heavier and the dirt road became slick, so I had to slow the horses to a crawl to keep from sliding down. I looked out over the land below me and squinted my eyes for any sign of the city below, but the sky's gray clouds made it hard to make out anything against the dark trees. The only thing I could see off in the distance was a barren wasteland stretching out to the horizon. I assumed that this must have been the desert that Edeni told us about, and I wondered how these two places, a frigid mountainside and a blazing desert, could exist so closely together. Still, I instantly realized it had to do with the elevation of the two plains. They could coexist next to each other because of the shape and height of the land.
"Do you see it?"
Edeni asked, leaned forward off her seat, and pointed through the trees. "See what?" I asked, and craned my neck in the direction she indicated.
"Oh,"
the she-wolf chuckled.
"It's difficult to point out to those who haven't been here before. Granum was built to be something like a refuge. After Edenheart was built, and women started to rapidly develop powers, men decided to fight back."
"Wait," I stated and turned to stare at her. "What? I thought the books I've read said the men basically rolled over and gave up. What do you mean the men fought back?"
"The history books are wrong,"
the wolf woman shook her head.
"I heard it from the mouth of my mother. Not only that, but in my mother's library, she had a book of ledgers dating all the way back to before Edenheart came into existence. It recorded anything that happened or had to do with my family, essentially since the beginning of my family line. There's quite a few entries about fights and battles that broke out in the streets. Men with crude guns, kind of like the ones we have today, but they were much harder to load and shoot. They almost took a few minutes to reload a single bullet, and even then, the bullets barely ever hit anything. They were non-lethal and hard to use, but they managed to scare a lot of the aristocrats, especially duchesses, such as myself."
"What do you mean?" I probed. "Women were powerful then, correct?"
"In some ways, yes,"
the Duchess nodded.
"The babies born with abilities were extremely powerful, but the women who developed over time weren't as strong, and their abilities took more time to regenerate after a single use. So men could attack, force the women to activate their powers, and then kill as many of them before their powers reactivated. So the leaders built smaller fortifications close by in case more of these attacks broke out. They mainly meant to hold the Duchess, her family, and her wards, such as workers, consorts, and servants. Over time, they grew, and more people were allowed inside in case of an attack. But as women grew stronger, the men lost more and more battles against them. The fortifications built to protect the Duchess and her people became small cities all on their own. Granum was the place where my ancestors would run to in case men attacked, and then after all of them stopped, they built onto it."
"I had no idea," I breathed. "Why isn't it in the history books? Why aren't the attacks recorded?"
"They only record the things to fit their narrative,"
the Duchess shrugged.
"Not only that, but can you imagine if they had, and it got into the hands of a man? It would give them hope. They dream of a life in society that is changed for the betterment of their sex, and the aristocrats certainly don't want that. So they wiped all traces of it from records. But, as I explained before, my family rebelled against the Queen, and they kept their documents. They didn't destroy or burn them as the Queen ordered everyone else to do. They hid them away in our personal libraries, and that's where I found them, years later, with yellowing pages and curled, wrinkled covers. I read them front to back. It may not have seemed like an interesting subject to most young girls my age, but I was different. I was the leader of Edenheart, and these were things that I had to know."
"You pointed out something. What was it?"
"Oh, Look, you might be able to see it if you squint your eyes. There's a spire, a single one peeking out above the trees. Every time I visited, I would look for that spire, since it was the only landmark you could see from this distance away. It has a golden point on it. That's what makes it easier to spot through the thick trees.
I loosened my grip on the reins, handed them over to the she-wolf, and steadied myself in the driver's seat as I stood. Then I gazed out over the acres of cedars and oaks and squinted my eyes in the direction that Edeny pointed. At first, I didn't see anything except the thick fog in the trees, like a mass of white spider webs and the occasional flurry of snowflakes that brushed against my face. Suddenly, the heavy clouds above my head broke open, and a single ray of sunshine blasted through for a matter of seconds. A glitter of gold caught my attention, and I immediately spied the spire that Edeny had described a few minutes ago. The gold was a single finial affixed to the top of the round roof, and it glittered once, then stopped as soon as the sun disappeared behind the clouds. We weren't far from the city at all, maybe about 15 to 20 minutes, and I glanced through the window over my shoulder as I sat back down. Valerie lazed around the table, eating from a small bowl, and leaned her head into her palm. The feline woman's chocolate-brown tail thumped against the floor out of boredom, and she stared listlessly out the window at the passing scenery. "Valerie," I commanded, "ready your sisters. We should be arriving soon. We'll find a good spot to stop, set up camp, and then get as close to the city as we can without being noticed."
"Yay!"
Valerie squealed.
"All right, I'll tell everyone."
The cat girl jumped from her chair, brushed off her hands, and then raced from the cabin. I listened to her excited voice in the distance over the roaring wheels and the beating hooves of our horses. Then I turned my gaze back toward the road ahead of us. Edeny handed back the reins and then guided me down the steep road toward Granum. The dirt started to even out, and we allowed our horses to move a bit faster, but not by much. Edeny had explained that most of Granum was built into the mountain side, and the west side of the town led toward the desert, which meant that thick forests entirely surrounded three sides of the city.
"It's just around the bend,"
Edeny whispered, and leaned forward with her hands pressed to the wood of the driver's seat.
"There should be a break in the trees with a path on the right side of the road. It might be overgrown, but there used to be a guard tower up there they used to use in case of attacks. The tower has been abandoned for years, but it should still stand. We can stop the caravan there, and then climb on top to look out over the city."
"All right," I muttered under my breath. "Let's keep an eye out for it." I snapped the reins against the horses' backs and pushed them forward around the long curve. Suddenly, the wrought iron fence came into view, but tall trees beyond that obscured everything. I stuck my tongue into the corner of my lip as we neared it, and then I pulled back on the reins. I kept my eyes peeled on the right side of the road for the path that Edeny had mentioned. The overgrown grass on either side of the road was yellowing from the constant cold, and there was no sign of any path in between the thick trees.
"There,"
Edeny breathed, tapped my shoulder, and pointed in between two thick cedars.
"It might be a tight squeeze, but I think we can make it if we move slowly. The guard tower is deeper inside the forest, and we may have to stop the caravan and walk there on foot."
"That's fine," I nodded, drew back on the reins, and guided the horses toward the small space. "Everyone has their coats and gloves along with their heavy boots. I know you said there's a small fortification, but do you think we'd be able to go in, look around, and scope out the Marchioness like before?"
"I don't see why we couldn't do that,"
Edeny whispered.
"Though the last time I was here, right before they took away my control of it, they'd placed in a schedule. People were only allowed in or out during certain times of the day, so I'm unsure if that's still in place."
"Why would they do that?" I asked. "If you had control, why'd they keep it closed off to everyone?"
"They'd moved in the Marchioness, even though that's not what they called her at the time,"
Edeny uttered.
"Sadly, they named her the Chief Constable."
"Does that mean—" I uttered.
"Yes,"
Edeny nodded.
"If you hadn't taken out Hortensia before I could get my hands on her, the Queen would have made a move on Edenheart and put her into place as a Marchioness. That's how she does it in every town she takes over. She sends in one of her own, gives them an open position of power, and then slowly takes control from the leader there. It doesn't matter if it's land given by birthright. She'll take it."
I eased the caravan through the trees, and a few of the branches dragged against the roof. I swiveled my head toward either side of the road, but there was no sign of any aristocrats or their carriages. Thankfully, none were coming or were close enough to hear the sounds of our caravan. The cold breeze didn't make it through the forest, and I tugged at the thick scarf around my neck as my breath missed it out in front of me. By tomorrow, the rest of my soldiers and my army would arrive. Then we'd begin planning our attack. But first, we needed to get the city's layout and dynamic. I pushed the horses forward, and their hooves beat heavily against the frozen ground. Edeni sat in her seat, but when I glanced at her out of the corner of my eye, she looked as if she were about to leap out of her seat. To the left of us were nothing but rows and rows of large cedars. The ground dipped down a little, but it wasn't as steep of an incline as the one in Berskan.
"Here!"
Edeni cried.
"Stop here! The guard tower should be right ahead of us."
"All right," I breathed, pulled back on the reins, and then jumped from the driver's seat. "We'll hike up there. Get your sisters and we'll head up there. We'll need you to guide us, Edeni." The wolf woman nodded and scurried from the front seat, but paused for a moment as her pointed ears swiveled. The Duchess listened to something off in the distance, squinted, and then shook her head. "What is it?" I hurriedly asked. "Is something coming?"
"It's nothing,"
the she-wolf murmured.
"I think it was just a deer. It sounded larger than I thought it was, but I think it's a doe and her fawn. They're farther down the incline."
"Ah," I nodded, tied off the reins to a tree, and then petted the neck of one of the mighty horses. "No danger here?"
"Not that I can hear or smell."
The Duchess smiled and then twitched her nose.
"But we might want to ask Daisy to check. She's the one with the best hearing and nose."
Edeni disappeared around the corner of the caravan, and in the distance, I heard her open up the first cabin's door. Her soft footsteps vanished for a moment and then came back with the others. Soon, all of my women stood in front of me in their heavy coats, scarves, and gloves. Their cheeks were round and dusted pink from the cold, but they looked excited. "Edeni," I commanded, "lead the way." The she-wolf nodded, glanced around the familiar trees, and then stepped forward. The Duchess led us through the woods and stopped every few minutes to examine paths and sniff the wind. As we moved in deeper, it was clear to me that we would have never made it back here with the caravan in tow. The trees grew too close together, and we had to step in between them to make it to the right spot. When I glanced toward Edeni, the Duchess's violet eyes were wide and sparkling. "Do you remember this place?" I asked.
"Yes,"
the she-wolf chuckled and grinned.
"The guard was abandoned many years before I, or even my mother, were born, so no one really comes out here. But my mother used to bring me to this place. Of course, before Granum was mine, it was hers, and whenever she had to split her time between the three cities, she'd bring me along with her. I would become the next Duchess, so I needed to learn everything about these cities. But this was by far my favorite part of Granum. I'd sneak out of the city and come up here as if it were my secret hideout. Kind of like Valerie in the attic back at the manor,"
Ryan chuckled.
"You used to sneak up there any chance you got. Didn't you have something like a hammock strung across the beams?"
"I did,"
the feline woman nodded.
"It was so nice, especially in the summer. The sun would hit the roof and it'd get so warm up there. I'd nap half the day and then go down into Charles's laboratory and then nap in a sunbeam. So many naps. I miss napping so much."
"I'm sure that in the future," I chuckled under my breath, "you'll have plenty of time to nap, my love."
"Josephine,"
Edeni uttered, and glanced over her shoulder toward the honey blonde.
"Yes?"
the drake woman piped up.
"Didn't I bring you out here once?"
the Duchess asked.
"My mother invited you along on our trip so I wouldn't be lonely, and I showed you my favorite spot in the whole city."
"Was it here?"
the honey blonde asked and glanced around the trees.
"I remember it, but this place isn't bringing back a lot of memories."
"It's quite all right if you don't remember. I think we stopped being friends shortly after that. I had to focus on my duties as the future Duchess, and I didn't have time to see anyone except for advisors and sit in on my mother's meetings."
"No, no!"
the drake woman gasped.
"I do remember. We went up into the watchtower, and we brought blankets with a flask full of tea. We sat bundled up together in the corner and told each other secrets.
I think we were 14, 15 at the time."
Edeni chuckled.
"You told me you didn't want a consort, and you hoped your mother never made you go through the horrible ritual. Sadly, she did, didn't she?
Yes,
the honey blonde whispered.
And you said that you thought that Lance McGovers was cute and you wouldn't mind having him as your own. Oh, I was a child.
The Duchess threw her head back and laughed.
That poor boy would have suffered horribly at my hands if my mother had allowed me to take him.
I think it's quite funny. When I was a teen, I was only attracted to boys who looked a certain way. There was a specific boy I saw once during a parade. He was standing off to the side, and he looked up at me, as if he'd never seen anyone so beautiful in his life. At first, I thought he was admiring my mother, as most people did. But he was looking at me. He had the prettiest green eyes and dark hair. I can't remember if it was black or dark brown. I thought he was so handsome, and he made my little adolescent heart flutter. I think that's why I wanted Lance so much, because he resembled that boy.
Wait!
Valerie interrupted.
Was that parade your debut into society?
Edeny paused for a moment, and her pale eyebrows furrowed as she thought. The Duchess glanced over at the feline woman and then clicked her tongue.
I think so,
the she-wolf whispered.
But how did you know that?
Because, I started, stepped forward, and slipped my hand into Edney's. I think that boy was me. I've retold that memory to Daisy, Valerie, and Ryan on multiple occasions, except from my point of view.
Really?
Edney gasped, and then her thin cheeks immediately flushed.
Then it's been you, all along. I've wondered about that boy all my life. Where he went, or even if he was still alive, but it was you, Charles. Hell, I should have realized the moment I laid eyes on you, when you were selling your wares on the side of the road. It's always been you, no matter what I do or where I go. Oh, look, the guard tower is up ahead.
The Duchess raced forward and pulled me after her. The guard tower was made entirely out of old, moss-covered bricks, and dry, brown vines covered most of it from view. The entrance inside was mostly covered with more vines, but the Duchess rushed forward, grabbed them with her gloved hands, and tore them apart to reveal a spiraling stone staircase to another level.
Let's go.
The she-wolf grinned and grabbed my hand for a second time. The eight of us hurried up the dirty and leaf-covered stairs. For a moment, we were entirely encapsulated in darkness except for the dim light from above. We moved as a unit, and I kept one hand pressed to the moss-covered wall as I leaned my head back toward the doorway above. We were moments away from seeing the city of Granum, and I wasn't sure what I was expecting. Would it look like Berskan with its heavy industrialization, or would it be more like Edenheart? From what Edeny had told me, it seemed like Granum was nothing more than a single large estate with a few other buildings, but they'd grown since then. How much bigger could it be? Edeny already said it was larger than Berskan and Edenheart, but Berskan was only slightly smaller than our hometown. What could this mean? Would we have a lot more on our plates than we'd initially thought? My army of soldiers and monster women wouldn't arrive until tomorrow, but would they be enough to conquer Granum? I'd told my women not to be anxious or nervous, but those two emotions beat at my heart. We already knew that Berskan was easier than any of the others that we'd have to face. No. I stopped those thoughts right in their tracks. I couldn't allow myself to think this way. I'd already shown I was capable, and I'd proved it to both my women and myself. Right as we reached the threshold of the doorway, Edeny stepped back and gestured me out. The air was colder than when we entered, and I came around the circular platform as I searched the horizon for the city. Finally, I laid my eyes on it, and my hands fell heavily on the brick wall in front of me. Granum was huge and sprawled out over the horizon. I hadn't seen it from the road because of all the enormous trees in the way. The buildings reached into the sky, and black smoke poured out of the chimneys of each. But that wasn't what made me draw in a sharp breath and step back. Granum was surrounded by an enormous granite wall, taller than any of the buildings inside. A guardhouse was built every 200 feet, and I spied tiny soldiers moving in and out of each. Not only that, but when I squinted down through the trees, I spied the greenish-blue surface of a moat and the enormous guarded drawbridge. By science, I snarled through gritted teeth. How are we going to get in there?